Welcome to episode 17 of Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat, and every Monday I publish a new episode with a different climate champion as my guest. We talk about why climate change is important to them, how they're working to make a better future, and their vision of the future. My guest this week is Dr. Rajit Ghad. He is a professor at the UCLA Samueli School of Engineering. He is also the founder and director of the Smart Grid Energy Research Center. Many of his students are making a contribution to modernizing the grid and transportation. So in addition to being a climate champion, he helps educate future champions. Rajit and his students have made significant contributions to electric vehicle charging technology, which will help California and other states that have a ZEV program meet their ZEV goals. You may be asking yourself what a ZEV program is. So let's have my childhood friend from Canarsie in Brooklyn, New York, and podcaster extraordinaire David Canyon explain it.
Hey Lee, the term ZEV program originated a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It's a little known, but true story. In the movie Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, Luke Skywalker and Han Solo find themselves stranded in the snow on the planet Hoth, far away from Rebel Base Echo. A Rebel Alliance and Rogue Squadron pilot located and rescued them. This young and heroic and brave pilot was on a snowspeeder during the Battle of Hoth in combat against the Imperial AT-AT walkers when he was shot down. The ZEV program was created in honor of that pilot so that all others can join the Rebel Alliance via the Fighter Academy, tuition free. The ZEV program is named for that pilot, Zev Sineska, Galaxian Champion. Zev Sineska, Climate Champion.
Well, Dave and I did know a kid in grade school named Zev. I guess he could have become a fighter pilot on Hoth. Dave hosts a podcast called Dumbing It Down with Dave. You can find it on Spreaker, iTunes, also known as Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Dave also has a YouTube channel called Dave's Fit Life, where he chronicles his life on video as he sleeps in his Honda Fit during the work week, exchanging 2 hours a day of commuting for 2 hours a day of exercise and tailpipe emission reduction, doing his part to help mitigate climate change. In addition to ZEV being the name of a kid I knew in grade school, ZEV is an acronym for Zero Emissions Vehicle. The ZEV program is a California state regulation that requires automakers to sell a specific number of zero-emission vehicles based on their sales. ZEV vehicles can be either battery electric vehicles, hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, or plug-in hybrids that run on both electricity and gasoline, but they count for less credit. 9 other states also use ZEV, including David's state of New York. While battery, electric, and hydrogen fuel cell vehicles produce zero emissions while they drive, unless the electricity and hydrogen are produced by zero carbon methods, they do contribute to climate change, but less and less as the percentage of renewables increases. If you have an alternative entertaining definition of ZEV, please visit my Twitter account at Lee Krivat and retweet the tweet for this episode, episode 17 with Dr. Rajit Ghad, and retweet your definition with the hashtag LearnATerm. If you make me laugh, I'll include it in the next Climate Champions episode. That's at Lee Krivat, retweet episode 17, hashtag LearnATerm, and make me giggle. Rajit and I share a passion for grid modernization, electric vehicles, and the nexus between them. And we both went to the same school. Welcome to Climate Champions. I'm sitting down with Dr. Rajit Ghad. He's professor at UCLA Samueli School of Engineering. He's also the founder and director of the Smart Grid Research Center, which is how we met.
That's right, Lee.
So with regard to climate change, what would you say your meaningful moment or moments were that got you involved?
Yes, I had a very specific moment. About 15, 16 years ago, my family and I were vacationing up in Canada. We went to Banff, and from there we went up north to the glaciers. And I was talking to a gentleman there who had been there for 60, 70 years, who had lived there. And I was just asking him about, you know, what he does. And he started talking about the hotel he was working at. And one thing led to the other. And I learned from him, and this is what he said. He said, if you and I were having this conversation 50 years ago, we would be 50 meters above where we are. And that stuck to me. And I asked him why. He said, I have seen parts of this land show up that were under permafrost. And he said, I don't see this going back. And that one incident, episode, and conversation has been fresh in my mind ever since. And that has made me realize that we need to do something.
I had a similar experience when I went to Alaska, and the person showing it to us said that it was miles from where it used to be, the glaciers. That it used to be you could see it from land, and now you have to take a boat. Well, this is recently, just a couple of years ago.
2 years ago I was in Alaska, and I had a conversation with a professor, and I heard the same story that you heard.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Yes. How fast it's happening now. And why is climate change personally important to you?
So I would say that there's a couple of specific things that are going on. I was born in a town in India called New Delhi. And I was in New Delhi in January, and I was in New Delhi again 3 weeks ago. When I returned from New Delhi in January, I started having breathing difficulties. It's too much of a coincidence that it's not related to the air. Number two, many years ago, about 25, 30 years ago, I had some family members in LA, and their child had asthma, and I would have a conversation with them, you know, where would you buy a house? I said, anywhere but the valley. If you look at what we have accomplished in LA in the last 30 years, we have reduced the pollution in the valley significantly. And we've done a lot of measures. We've introduced a lot of measures there, right here in Southern California. And I think Southern California is definitely a global leader in sort of trying to get clean air. And so I argue that, you know, right here at LA, I've actually seen what can be done. And I think in countries like New Delhi, where I was born, they need to do things. And so it hits home to me personally in two ways.
I was in New Delhi a few years ago, and I was in Beijing a few years ago, and in both places, my eyes burned. Definitely a dramatic difference.
Yes.
The hotels had filters. They were filtering air.
Ah.
Yeah. That's pretty
well
drastic.
In my parents' home in New Delhi, they have filters running 24/7.
Okay, well, then it's not just in the hotels.
And it's commonplace.
So tell me about what you do at UCLA.
So, as you mentioned, I'm a professor of engineering and the founding director of the Smart Grid Energy Research Center, which was started about a decade ago, which is about the time I met you, Lee.
Yes.
I do research. My significant area of research here as part of the center is connecting electric cars into a grid of the future. What that means is that I would like to have electric cars that are charging when the grid operator has energy available, when there's excess energy, for example, at night, or sometimes if the sun is shining like today in the middle of the day, you have excess energy. So you want to utilize the solar energy and not use it, not turn it off in lieu of fossil fuels. So I'm very interested in how electric vehicles can charge on the grid in the future using entirely renewable forms of energy. In particular in Southern California, there's a lot of sun. And if you go outside this country also, you go to places like India. India has invested a lot in solar in the last 5 years. China is investing in solar. Europe, Germany has been one of the world's leaders in solar energy. So solar energy is exciting to me because you can put solar on every rooftop. You can put solar on parking structures, which is, for example, what we did here in Parking Structure 9, that you look outside my window, you see the solar panels. They were installed as part of my research project. Under the solar panel, there's a couple of dozen EV charging stations. And we have been, for example, one of the things we did last year was coming up with a computer algorithm that incentivizes drivers to charge at the right time to be able to maximize the local utilization of solar for EV charging. Electric vehicles are going to change the grid significantly. Electric car can sometimes consume more energy than an entire apartment, or maybe two or three apartments, and therefore they will become a significant consumer energy. But does it mean we have to add a lot more capacity? I hope not. I think by adding solar power on the distribution side and being able to manage effectively, in the future, I think we will have this new model of the grid where you have solar, electric cars on the distribution system without having to invest large amounts on the transmission side. And that's what I'm really, really excited about.
A friend of mine, Tim Sassine at Ballard, he did a study and he found that if we meet our ZEV goals in California, then the amount of energy we will need to deliver to endpoint is twice what it is today. So you are correct. If we don't figure out smart ways to do it, we're going to have to invest a very large amount in our grid.
Yes.
So tell me about your history prior to UCLA.
Prior to UCLA, I moved to UCLA. I was in the Bay Area. I was doing a sabbatical at Stanford University, and some of my students were doing a startup company. And I learned in Silicon Valley, working with my I would say very, very creative students, how to be an entrepreneur. And it's a very humbling experience because we started the company and then the company did not succeed. So that was my prior experience for a couple of years. Before that, I was teaching at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the Midwest, working very closely with the automotive industry, doing research collaboration with automotive folks. So that's where I learned a lot about the automotive industry. Prior to that, I was a postdoc at UC Berkeley, where I taught for a year. Prior to that, I was working in industry, in the AI industry in the 1980s. We were building AI solutions for, once again, the automotive industry. So I've had sort of my touch with Detroit a couple of times in my life. And now here I'm in California working with the next generation of the electric car industry. We have three electric car companies right here in Southern California. We have four electric car companies in Northern California. I interact with pretty much all of them. I know so many of my students are working in these electric car companies. We work very closely with electric grid operators now. I look at a lot of the research I did. I did work in energy systems. I did work in robotics and AI. Prior to my work in smart grids, I did a lot of work in wireless systems, wireless sensor networks. And I look at a lot of those as component technologies that go into building of this smart grid of the future. So I've worked in many different areas, but I think that it's sort of culminating in this work that I'm doing at the last mile of the grid, bringing electric cars and solar into the grid.
It almost feels like you planned it, like all the different pieces that you built in your life are all coming together right now.
Not at all. Life has been very serendipitous for me. I have seen opportunities. And in fact, the smart grid project that I got in was an accident. I met a very significant player from Southern California Edison in 2006. I held a workshop and we had two, three electric utilities here and talking about the importance of information technology in the grid. And that workshop essentially made me think. And then I took a sabbatical and I started learning about all the technologies that I've learned about and how they could be applied in the grid. And so that was sort of the culmination point of my technical interest in the grid.
You talked a little bit about your startup experience and how that didn't go very well. Can you talk about other challenges that you've had?
One of the big challenges in this whole electric car industry is that of infrastructure. So if you look at the number of public stations till about a year ago, right? I mean, in some different parts of Southern California, the number of electric cars, number of public stations, that ratio was 18 to 1, 15 to 1. So far more electric vehicles looking for charging stations than the infrastructure that was in existence. Even now, that gap is very significant. And I went to China. So I've been to China. I was there last year a couple of times. And I went to the East Coast. I was sort of in the western part of China. And you look at the number of electric cars in China in 2018. China sold three times the number of electric cars in 2018 than did the U.S. Well, six, 7 years ago, U.S. was ahead of China. And why is that happening? Why is China taking off in a very big way? Because the Chinese central government has understood and realized that they have to invest in infrastructure for electric car charging in a very big way. And they've done it. And they're doing it. So the ratio of electric public charging stations, number of electric cars, is much higher in China compared to the US. So we are really falling behind. We're falling behind now Germany, Western Europe. And we were, we are the country that introduced Tesla to the planet, right? And because of Tesla, all the big car companies around the world, they're Tesla wannabes. But we've really fallen behind in infrastructure. It's a big challenge. And you know, people are looking at charging stations all over the place. And so I think we have to overcome that. That means investments, both from the state and from the federal government. We are really lagging behind Europe and China. And as I mentioned, I was in India 2 times this year. India is going to invest a huge amount of money in public charging infrastructure because people don't have private garages. And China's already doing it. So I think that we've got to do something on the infrastructure side. And I just don't mean adding transmission. I mean smart charging infrastructure. For example, having distributed solar connected to local storage. You could do it on top of parking structure, for example, as I mentioned, parking structure 9. We actually have a 100 kilowatt battery system there that would feed the charging stations when the sun's not shining. So I argue smart infrastructure managed by smart software, that's where I think what the world needs. And that was exactly the motivation for my PhD student 4.5 years ago when he graduated to start a company for smart electric car charging stations.
Do you want to talk about that company a little bit?
Sure. So the company was started, so the PhD student was graduating and I talked to him. He said, I don't want to become a faculty member. You know, I don't want to work in a large company. And so he and I started talking, some of the researchers in UCLA, we had some patents and the patents came out of a big grant that was funded by Department of Energy, in which we worked with LADWP. So it was a $120 million program for the whole region, including USC and JPL Caltech as well. It was a big research infrastructure project from which over 100 EV charging stations were built. Well, based on the research successes in UCLA, the team decided, well, there's a commercial potential, spun the company off. Now the company is based in the Los Angeles Clean Tech Incubator in downtown LA. The company is doing pilots in Southern California, in Northern California, in New York State, signing partnerships with all sorts of interesting organizations. And for me personally, having worked with a very good business team who has joined the company, I'm learning a lot of very interesting things that startups need to do to be able to succeed, which I frankly, if you asked me 4.5 years, I would be clueless. You know, as a professor, I always think of how great this technology is, but how do you get it into the infrastructure? And through them, I'm learning about investments, smart infrastructure. It has been pretty phenomenal. That experience has been pretty phenomenal for me personally, being an advisor to the company.
Before, you were talking about the challenge with infrastructure.
Yes.
And I recently read that Norway, I think 60% of the new car sales were electric vehicles.
About roughly 54%.
Okay, that's exactly. And about, you'll correct me on this too then, about a third of them were Teslas, which puts it at 18.
Yeah.
I'm doing the quick 54
thing. Yes, those numbers are pretty good numbers. Yeah.
Okay. But now I'm wondering how they can charge all those vehicles. They do have the benefit of a lot of hydro and storage in hydro.
Yeah, they have a lot of hydro, they also have storage. So of course, and you know, I would say that also, you know, actually, if you look at the sheer numbers, so the percentage is huge, but Norway is a small country.
Yeah.
The numbers are actually in this, in the tens of thousands. So it's a small number. So for them to add, you know, I mean, you know, for us, 1% is a lot. And so for them, so it's not that many cars as in absolute numbers. But like you said, they have a lot of hydro, they have, you know, infrastructure in place. And I think that they're planning ahead and they're planning the investment, which is what we need to do in a much more aggressive way in this country, both at the federal and the state levels.
It would be so cool if the US could somehow figure out how to incent EVs in the right way and we can really see that curve drive forward.
I would love to see that happen.
Yeah.
We need more incentives.
We share this passion.
Yes.
For the EV.
Yes.
What are other successes that you've had?
Sure. When we started this research project in around 2009 that was funded by US Department of Energy, we were working with our local utility, Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, who's our utility here in UCLA. And the first thing I did was in parking structure 9 here on the third floor. In 2009, even there were really no EVs, if you remember that. So we actually got a bunch of golf carts from UCLA Parking Services. And I had my students, and we still have pictures of the golf carts.
I've seen it live a number of times.
And we were waiting for Nissan to come out with their cars and so forth. And we installed these EV charging stations. We installed one EV charging station, parking structure 9 on the third floor. And that's still there for historical reasons. And I met with the facilities people. And they said, you know, if all the cars plug in at 8 o'clock and if all start charging, we'll have a massive morning peak, which we already have in California. We do have a morning peak from commercial customers, and we'll be hit with demand charges. That's not good. Can you flatten the load out through the day? And I started talking to... So, well, that was before people had EVs. So 2011, the first Nissan Leafs came. So what we did was we offered a charging station, free electricity, to all the drivers on UCLA campus, starting with parking structure number 9. And we said, we'll give you electricity, but in exchange, you have to use this app, and we will modulate when we're going to charge you. UCLA parking services were very generous. They were paying for the electricity. It was part of the research project, very well funded by DOE and for a good cause. Well, what happened is, what really surprised me was, and which was a super success story, was the drivers who came forth with their first EVs, the first, second, third owners of EVs on campus came to Park Structure 9, they plugged into my charger, they believed in us, and they took our app and used this experimental charger that came out of my lab, assembled by the students. We didn't buy any commercial charging stations because they were expensive, and my students said, hey, professor, we can build them for a couple hundred bucks each. So we built them, and the software was managing it, software was on the cloud, and it was tracking energy consumption, things like that, and making it easier for the driver, but we would take over control of EV charging. And I was concerned about the drive, two things. The drivers might consider that this may damage their car. So we made them sign off that they're willing to risk their car.
I think I signed that.
Yeah, you signed that. But they did. And today there's like over 200-300 people on campus, okay? The second thing is that they, to this day, there's been no complaint about that. The other thing is that they were very, very willing to try things out. Of course, that was a very early stage. Well, guess what? 2011, today's 2019, people are still signing on to the system and using the system en masse and still willing to try. So we still haven't entered the early majority, the classic curve.
Yeah.
But still, I think that there's far more people now in the mainstream that are buying EVs, but they're still willing to try things out, being experimental with these algorithms. And I think that was truly impressive, that to look at, people were ready. People were ready to try a new product called EV that has no tailpipe emissions, and even willing to try out this brand new, completely untested, non-commercial infrastructure in the university. And they came out in the hundreds. And so today there's well over 1,000 EVs on campus out of 24,000 cars. My estimate is 1,300, 1,400. But I would say that to me, that was the best, the most interesting part of sort of talk of success story. The other success story is, of course, the startup, which I think is a success. I don't mean commercially. I mean it's a success of the spirit of the students. The students wanting to do something to make a difference. And this startup now is getting new young students graduating. So a student just joined startup who graduated last summer, willing to work for peanuts for a startup and experiment and try to change the world. So I think it's exciting to see this next generation wanting to do something different.
I think they're much more aware of the cost of not doing something different.
That's a good point, yes.
The first car my daughter ever sat behind the steering wheel of, mm-hmm. And drove on her own, mm-hmm. when I was kind of trying to teach her, was a Nissan Leaf.
Oh, wow.
So that was her first car that she drove. How about a vision for the future? How do you see things shaking up over the next 10, 20 years?
So I definitely see, I think there's a lot of people trying to come up with estimates about how many electric cars and so on and so forth. And you hear numbers, 20 years from now, you have 20, 40 estimates and so on and so forth. I see in 20 years, I think that if we play the infrastructure card right, if we invest in the smart infrastructure, I see no reason for us to have less than 50% of the cars on the road being electric. Just if you think about, we have electric outlets almost everywhere. And we just have to manage these outlets, add a little bit more generation, especially if you add solar. So to me, I see no reason why we should not have at least all the cars being, 50% of the cars being electric in about 20 years. But I also think that coupled to that is the whole business of generation, distributed solar. And I think that if you put distributed solar with electric cars together, there's something interesting that is going to come out. I've been doing research on this since over a decade. It's called vehicle to grid, as you're familiar with it, right?
Yes.
Vehicle to grid means you're using the vehicle as a mechanism for energy storage. When you have excessive power on the grid, you put it into the car. When there's shortage of power, you take the energy back from the car, put it in the grid. Well, you know, the sun is shining in the day, it's not shining at night. And sometimes a cloud cover comes. So if you assume in the future, and the amount of solar on the grid is just increasing significantly everywhere around the world, so I argue, but of course it's intermittent, right? It's not continuous. But you could use all the batteries in the cars here in California or anywhere around the globe as an energy storage device. And that will allow you to increase the amount of renewables. And if you have more renewables, you can have more cars. So I argue that the nexus of electric cars and solar is going to present phenomenal opportunities for us to have clean transportation and clean energy source. Because even if you don't have tailpipe, you want to make sure that the source of electricity is clean. And so I argue that this nexus is going to be very interesting. And I think vehicle to grid is something that will happen in the future. We're not quite ready for it because the world is just getting used to electric cars. With, of course, countries like Norway and so forth leading the way. But I think that countries like Norway, I think, are primed and ready now to try vehicle-to-grid technology in a large scale. Even California, I think certain parts of California, like in UCLA, we have tried that. One of the very interesting protocols that is coming out out of Europe, actually, is called ISO 15118. That protocol, in the protocol, there's a vehicle-to-grid capability. Inside the protocol, that means every level two charging station in UCLA with that protocol will become vehicle to grid enabled as long as the car companies are going to allow that protocol, support the protocol. And from what I hear, car companies are working to support the grid. So I argue two to three years from now, you don't have to do anything. These charging stations here will automatically be vehicle to grid enabled just by virtue of a protocol.
Here's why I think 50% is going to happen.
Okay.
Or more.
Sure.
And it's my wife.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Because she was very skeptical. Uh-huh. About the whole electric vehicle thing. It was kind of my job thing, you know, in her mind. But when she started driving electric, she found it very difficult to go back to gas. It's frustrating. The car doesn't go when you want it to go. It makes noise. You have to pump gas. It smells. She actually enjoys driving now.
That's a really interesting point. The first time I drove an electric car, I received a loaner from the LA Mayor's office many years ago. I received a loaner, which was the BMW Mini E.
I remember the Mini. Yeah.
They have made a few, yeah. A couple hundred of them, and I got one of those to try. And because they wanted me to share with them my thoughts on the car, they got a few. And the most interesting, when I told my students, let's sit with me, and I had them drive. And when they hit the pedal, they were like, this is so exciting to drive. And I think that the driving experience itself is different. And I think that a lot of us now enjoy that experience. Someone like me, I think there's no going back.
At first, I was trying to budget the amount of energy I used. I wanted my mileage to be good on my electric car. Mm. A really exciting thing happened to me when I realized that instead, just enjoying the acceleration and the speed, it might take a little bit more electricity, but it was just a more joyous way to drive.
But do you know that this is something I try to tell my students? Because of the regenerative braking, when you accelerate, and after that when you decelerate, a significant amount of the decelerate energy, not 100%.
Oh, I don't decelerate, man. I just keep going.
Okay.
Do you have any questions for me?
Yes. So, you know, Lee, as I mentioned, we met about a decade ago, and you have some phenomenal experience with electric utilities, electric cars, and commercialization startup environment, right? So, and I'm really concerned about the infrastructure issue, and I think that we have to all work together to solve it. What's your thought about infrastructure and what needs to get done? How would you address that?
Oh my goodness, my brother was just asking me about this because he lives in Sacramento. His driveway is at an extreme angle. Mm-hmm. He's actually on the podcast I just released this week. Oh. And he's frustrated that he would like to get an electric vehicle, but he doesn't see how he can charge it. So I think that's definitely an issue. You want an answer, and I will tell you some. Mm-hmm. And they're a little bit out there. One is today, there's a company called Spark Charge. I really hope I don't get the name wrong. And they have a mobile charger. And I was just speaking with the CEO about the potential for at night when people that don't have garages to park and they have to leave their car out, having a truck go around and using these mobile chargers to charge them potentially, at least to get it started, you know, as a potential way to go. I still think that if you live in an apartment, apartment buildings do have parking and they should provide charging. And a number of them in San Diego, for example, are starting to work with SDG&E on accomplishing that. So I think that's potential. And then at people's work, where they work, when we have solar, that's going to happen in the middle of the day. Many people work in the middle of the day when the sun is shining. That's a perfect time to charge. So having more infrastructure where people work, I think, will be a big turning point. There's a company I'm on the advisory board of called Pi Energy, and they have developed, and they're getting the efficiency up and up over time, a very, very inexpensive solar. And the material is so thin that they believe they could coat a car in that. Wow. And they can coat cell phones in that. And that there would be enough efficiency to offset the amount that you need to get from the grid. So I think that will be a game changer as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Exciting.
Is there anything else you want to talk
about? Yes, yes, I do. You know, you mentioned this technology, right? Technology is, I think, what is driving a lot of this. I mean, technology is actually changing and progressing and making itself, the old technology, obsolete. And I think the really interesting part now is that the students are really excited about not just this domain, trying to change the world with electric cars and solar energy, but also that technology is drawing them into this field. They're realizing, like you said, this new technology you're talking about. A couple of my students in the lab have developed a small little, fully autonomous driven, portable mobile battery. And they're driving it around to do all sorts of interesting applications, all sorts of, including delivering pizza, things like that. But one of the applications I told them was, why not use it as a self-driving EV charging device? They can explore that. It's a research idea. It's a research concept. And we used open source software to make it autonomous. So there's so much technology that exists. You put it together. You take something from here, take something from here. And I think that, to me, that is what is exciting. And that's what we have to harness, is the power of the mind of the students. That's the opportunity to change the world. That's what I'm really excited about.
Sometimes I think that we're not going to change fast enough and that the impacts of climate change are going to be very, very significant. However, when I have a positive focus, I think about the technology and how fast it is advancing. We have computers, obviously every 18 months it doubles, that's Moore's law. But there are other laws that dictate, I think Swanson's law, that the more you build things and the more you learn how to manufacture, I think you pick up about 20% a year in reduction in cost. Because we're on the technology curve now, I do think there's hope.
Yeah, I think we're living in exciting times and we have to all be optimistic.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah. I'm going to wrap up now if it's okay with
you.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay, so I'm going to wrap up with a wrap. You went to Canada and saw the climate was the glacier eaters. The person told you they had lost 50 meters. You couldn't believe it. Imagine the cost, all that loss of permafrost. You went to India. There was no air in your lungs or belly. And that's why you said they've got to do something in New Delhi. You have an amazing passion for the EV. And you jumped on a grant from the Department of Energy. There is a nexus between solar and EV increases both. They did. And one of the magical things is vehicle to grid.
That was amazing. You composed that on the fly, Lee. I think this is your next profession.
We didn't talk much about it, but Brigitte puts on Smart Grid Energy Research Center events that are top-notch. Great speakers and great technology demonstrations. If you are interested, check out the site at smartgrid.ucla.edu. And remember, if you're in San Diego and want some great laughs, Most nights, I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Finest City Improv or both. To confirm specific dates, or if you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at www.crevatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. If you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. And if you or someone you know is a climate champion, please let me know. Rajit's work in smart grid and transportation electrification has led to numerous students working for grid modernization and electric vehicle companies, including the launch of a startup EV charging company. In addition to being a climate champion, he educates future climate champions, multiplying his effort to help mitigate climate change.